This is a conversation about spirituality, but also love and relationships, which I believe go hand in hand. This is a conversation with Daji or Kamlesh D. Patel, a new age spiritual leader who's leading a movement where the central theme is the heart. The central theme is love. I'm not going to talk too much about this podcast in the intro because I feel like it's one of those conversations that you've just got to sink into. This is Daji on The Ranveer Show. Namaste, Daji. It's a huge honor having you on The Ranveer Show. I do not look at these kind of interactions as podcasts for my audience. I look at them as blessings in my own personal life, the life of the person behind the podcast. So deeply honored. Thank you.
Me too. Good to see you. And you are what I've heard about, as I already told you, Ranveer. Glad to meet you. And I can breathe my last seeing you, young people, interested in spirituality, so it gives me a lot of hopes.
That's my big hope and also my observation, honestly. I feel like there's a whole generation of kids coming out where, you know, there's this theory that all of them are special souls and we'll see the whole world gradually becoming more spiritual. Would you agree to something like that? That, you know, kids born nowadays are not your average souls?
They are not average. In fact, they are rebellion in a good sense.
Okay.
The reason is, the previous generations, they have been living in the, what we call, state of obedience. If parents say so, they believe so. Nothing wrong with it also. It's okay. It maintains peace. Today's generation is quite challenging and they say, you believe in God? This, I really don't know. Some people say I don't. And I do admire that honesty, because unless and until you do experience, how can you believe? So my movement, my appeal to youth is, come to a neutral point. Don't say I don't believe and don't say I believe. And run an experiment with your heart. You become the scientist, let your heart judge, and through the experiments you carry out on a day-to-day basis, let the results speak to itself and say, yes, I believe that he exists because I experience. So you can speak from your experience, from your conviction, not by borrowed knowledge. Borrowed knowledge will not take us further.
Daji, a little personal question to you, but what is your image of God? Like, I feel every human being has an image of God. Some people say it doesn't exist. Some people say it's the universe. For some people, it's Krishna Bhagwan. For some people, it's Jesus Christ. For some people, it's just being a good person. So what is your image of God in your head?
Image of God has been changing in my life. It has been evolving over a period of time. When I was younger, I had certain image of God in the form of Rama, Krishna, Allah, you know, all, I believed in everything. Then I came across Ramakrishna Paramahansa literature and Vivekananda and many saints. And then you start watching Mahabharata, etc., etc. And then if you try to meditate on Lord Krishna, you know who comes to your mind? The actor. Or the photograph of Radha and Krishna. So we get trapped into imaginary images of, you know, from movies, from photographs, etc. Then comes a stage where you believe God is all-pervading because you start experiencing presence. But what is he or is she? You know, and this has been a challenge. To me, until now, I have come to this conclusion that God is a principle. He can be understood when you yourself become godly. That's all there is. As you become more godly, the other entity becomes more revealing to you. It appeals to your heart. So becoming will tell us that, yes, I have become godly, and that's how the God is. Earlier, you know, based on the needs of a person, people created God in their own image. Four fundamental needs of a human being: artha, dharma, kama, moksha. Right? Artha means some basic fundamental physical need that will be satisfied with finance support. That is artha. Kama, emotional fulfillment. Dharma, what is right, what is wrong, and uphold what is right. Right? Without any doctrination, with what comes from your conscience and you stand by it. And that's what today's youth is protesting, that this is the dharma because this is what I feel in my heart. See? And moksha is the ultimate, what they call in sastras as a state of liberation. You have arrived at a total state of freedom, which is freeing you also from the concept of freedom. See, now we pray based on these four individual requirements. And individually, you may not be fulfilled at the artha level, right? Or you may be fulfilled at artha level, financial level, but what other things are remaining? Or you may have all three, but moksha is evading you. Or you have, may have moksha, you may be full of spirituality, but what if your basic needs, bread and butter, is missing out? That is also a topsy-turvy world, you see. So to me, it's a fine balance of four fundamental requirement. Nothing excessive.
Daji, so they call my generation the mental health issues generation, you know, where everyone's mental health is taking a toll because of social media, because of all the numbers around us, because of the need for validation. So you said that a lack of balance is what causes issues. Now, is the lack of balance happening due to a wrong kind of lifestyle, a wrong kind of environment? What's happening with this generation, according to you?
So we begin with parents. Parents are to be blamed. Can we? I mean, it will be a terrible thing to say such a thing, but it's a fact. See? Next stage comes where you lack grandparents' support. You know, you heard about these Amazonian shamans. They know so much. They are old people. They have the knowledge of all the all kinds of herbs, all kinds of trees, what to eat, what not to eat, under certain circumstances, what are the medicines you need to take to prevent certain diseases. Okay. The youth of the Amazonian jungle is now migrating to the cities. Old folks are left behind in the forest. Now, what happens when the traditional knowledge is not passed on to the next generation or generation after that? There is a vacuum. It is not transferred. I don't know if you had the opportunity of spending time with your grandparents. If you did, then you'll appreciate, wow, the way they eat, the way they talk, the way they interact with other people in a soft manner, that gets absorbed by a child. Imagine just living with parents, and parents both are working, running around, see? And child is left to a maid or a babysitter. What kind of samskaras you're going to inculcate in these children? So you can say genetically you have given a gift to your children, but at a mental level, at an emotional level, at a spiritual level, these are all more and more vital. And they remain kind of malnutritioned. They are not having a proper diet at those levels. Imagine if you are having a malnutrition at a physical level. It will be visible. Imagine at an educational level. Imagine at a maturity level, emotional level. And imagine what happens when you are spiritually bankrupt. That's what is happening today. We are Let me explain to you a bit differently.
Sure.
We borrow our genetic pattern from our parents. If you are going to grow 5'9", you will grow 5'9". At the most, you go to gym and exercise and, you know, you might grow to be 5'10". But you can never be 6.5". So we have limitation at a physical level. Now let's go at a mental level. What happens at a mental level? A son of a farmer or a son of a rickshaw puller or a truck driver, he can study. He can become even a PhD. Right? So there is more flexibility of enriching yourself at a mental level. Right? But not all can be Einsteins. There too, there is some level of limitation, but it's not so difficult. Okay. At a spiritual level, there are infinite possibilities. There is no limit to what all you can achieve at a spiritual level. But now you see where our efforts are going, more and more towards, you know, and 6 foot. Nothing wrong with it. Just as there is nothing wrong in having a good physique, it is good for your health. I need to strengthen my mind. I need to also parallelly strengthen my spiritual or moral muscles. That's where I think youth is lacking today. They feel that starvation, that something is lacking within me, and they are not able to pinpoint what is that.
Right.
You see, once you can fulfill your inner hunger, automatically you'll find peace and you'll be calm, and success will await at every stage, because we are driven by our inner poise. If you are not poised, however brilliant idea you may have, the implementation will fail. Because not poised, you are restless. With a restless girlfriend, if you have, you'll feel so disturbed. Let me get away from her. She's always restless.
That's true. You know?
And so, imagine if I don't have peace in my heart, I will be only radiating restlessness all around me. So first thing is to, I must bring about this calmer, peaceful state. It's not that you are becoming introvert and least interested in the outside world. No. In fact, the peaceful person, poised person, they can achieve a lot more. But that itself is a power.
Right. Yeah, Daji, I have so many questions for you. But since you mentioned, you know, having the wrong partner, I'll try to take a question from there. It's kind of a bit of a psychology question. So I was reading this very interesting article on the nature of relationships. And there's this thing called the bad boy complex, where basically they say that a lot of women are more attracted to possibly men who signal bad boy traits, you know, who have something wrong about them, but that's what attracts you. And the same can go for men going after the wrong kind of female partners. So what happens in someone's head? Like, why are you more drawn to the challenge rather than someone who is, you know, right for you in many ways? And I'm not saying that this is a general statement, but this tends to happen a lot.
It's a general thing. Exceptions are there. But as you say, it's a very general thing. And it always leads to disasters. You already know. And we as human, we like to challenge.
Right.
A person who refuses you, you go after that person so often.
Right.
But a person who is easily available, you say, oh no, there must be something wrong with this person. Right? So part of it is also ego. That hook or crook, I have to win this person.
Right.
And then when you build a relationship with such an ego, how long will this ego last? Fulfillment of ego will last. Immediately, with the success of having a relationship with a person you are attracted towards, you'll be happy, but it will not last longer, because opposite may attract, but eventually these opposites will crumble. Because I cannot live with a person who is having opposite views all my life. In the physical world, in the science, they say North Pole, South Pole. Opposite poles attract, anode and cathode, positive and negative charge. It's true in the physical realm. In the emotional realm, opposites will attract also. But it's only temporary, only to be repaired again. So we have to be patient with the kind of partner we're going to have and make sure there is some sort of a resonance. There is some sort of a vibratory level that matches yours.
Right.
So I think vibrational compatibility is very important.
Daji, but what about the individual's own spirituality because of marriage? So does something change in your own spiritual growth after you go through the process of marriage? What happens to your personality? What happens after you have a child?
Oh, it's even better. You see, when a spiritual person is there, I mean, let us say, I consider you as a spiritual boy. And your vibratory level is definitely going to affect your wife. She will also sit with you and offer prayers. And when two individuals who are prayerful, reverential, they love each other, imagine the kind of progeny they can end up having. A balanced society is the only result out of it. To me, when you meditate, especially with your partner, day in and day out, you're practicing meditation together, it changes everything. It makes you more peaceful. I mean, you have heard the word, what is pleasure, right? It is restricted to a physical level. You have heard the word joy. It's here, mental, emotional. Very rarely people have experienced bliss. We have these three phases, like at physical level, when we enjoy something, we call them pleasures. Right? Pleasure of having a great meal, for example. When we move on to emotional level, we say, wow, what a joyful relationship, right? Very rarely we talk about bliss, which is at a spiritual level. And I would like that we thrive in a society, in a family, from that level as well. So imagine you and your wife are meditating together. And in that state of meditation, where you come to most intimate relationship, where you are invoking God also. People often, when they make love, they turn the photographs of gods and goddesses in a reverse way and say, no, God, please don't look at us. It is as if it is very sinful. It is not sinful. You are inviting a very precious soul. And we call soul as Atman, right? And Atman is part of Paramatman. You are inviting something very vital. How can it be a shameful thing? It is not. So one has to understand that it is a reverential process. And when both individuals are in that state, your chemistry works at a different level altogether. Let me explain to you something from epigenetics. I don't know if you follow epigenetics. Epigenetics is all about influence of environment on your genetic expression. Okay. They've done trials, experiments in Brooklyn, New York City. Mothers-to-be who are going through a certain phase, they have a different lifestyle, people living in a ghetto, where there's so much of crime. You don't know when, from which side the gun will blast. And even husband, who knows, he might be sleeping with a gun under a pillow, so he need not even argue. So mothers-to-be who are under constant stress, that cortisol level is always so high. And when your response is always sympathomimetic, where you either fight or you take a flight, either you punch or you run away, right? Fight or flight mode, because of the sympathetic responses. Now, when that happens, your blood circulation is more in your limbs because you have to fight. Blood is needed there. Then what happens? The blood is taken away from the visceral organ, from the vital organs. Now the same hormones, same neurotransmitters are crossing the placenta barrier in mother's womb, going to the fetus that is growing. That will also start, having limbs, longer limbs. There also the blood is transferred away from the vital organs, for example, your GI tract, gastrointestinal tract, your lungs, etc. So they end up having a weaker digestion, weaker lung capacity. Okay. Furthermore, the frontal part, frontal cortex they call, which is all about thinking, reasoning. Blood supply in this area is reduced. But the blood supply in this, what they call amphibian brain, reactive brain, increases. So the blood supply here will be more. So the brain development here at a physical level will be more here and less here. So cognitive abilities also drop. So stressful environment can be combated if husband is cooperative, bringing about harmony and peace. Similarly, wife should not be indulging in such actions that they can create stress. That's why in our ancient Indian traditions, when they learn that daughter-in-law is pregnant, within a month, what do? They have a ritual. They do the worship, havan, etc. And very respectfully, prayerfully, they send her away to her parents' place. Why? Because that's a familiar place where her familiar food, she'll enjoy life there. She'll be without stress. In an agrarian society, when husband is working, when mother-in-law is working, a lady who is pregnant will feel shy. How come I am not working? I have to also work. That stress will always be there. So they send her away, see. So our traditions are very rich actually, and with a scientific reason. They give a reverential puja and then send her off with a lot of respect to her parents' place, you see. And she would spend time in bhajan kirtan. They will be spending time with a lot of, good storytelling by parents. So the fetus that is growing inside will imbibe all those things, you see. The hearing capacity of a fetus is very great. Even through the placenta barrier, they understand the sound, not eye vision. Eye vision develops even after 3-4 months, perhaps, after it is born. They cannot even recognize the colors when they are newly born. See?
Hmm.
Yeah. So coming back to this idea of reverential feelings in your heart and not taking this sexual aspect of relationship to be as a damnation or as a sin. At the same time, one doesn't have to become so compulsive, excessive, so that the holy aspect of it is also neglected. So we have to bring some sort of a integration, some sort of a balance between spiritual life and our bhautic life, material life. They have to be balanced. My master, under whom I got training, he used to say that bird cannot fly with one wing. Needs two wings. Our human existence also should not become like, that I decide to become sannyasi. And what happens to my parents when I take sannyas at a very early age? My parents will suffer. So it's an irresponsible act. Even I don't admire Lord Buddha having a child and then say I'm having a detachment and I'm running away into the forest. He left his wife and a newly born child in the palace and just left just like that, as if he has no responsibility. It is irresponsible act. To me, spirituality and materiality must go together. It should not be at the cost of the other. It has to be together. And even though I may have it together, imagine for a moment a bird with two wings. What is it that guides these two wings? It's a tail. And that's how in the aeroplane they invented the tail part. You see, it gives the direction to the plane, the rudder. And what is this tail in us that gives the direction to go in both directions, this way or that way, you know? That is our heart. Heart is the tail, guiding principle, that always tells us, oh, you follow your heart, it's always good. Imagine, Nanveer, imagine for a moment the wrong decisions you have made in your life. You don't have to tell me. But when you analyze those decisions, what went through your mind before you made those wrong decisions? You will come to one single conclusion. You did not listen to your heart. Analyze any of your decisions.
Yeah, I mean, you're definitely right.
So we need to listen to the heart. Now imagine if your heart is corrupt. Even the most corrupt heart will give you the right decision. But one has to know how to listen to the heart. And that's why I think if a person just becomes quiet, calm for a few minutes and focus on the heart, it will guide them. And that is meditation. Meditation is nothing but tapping into the guidance which is already there inside you. The gurus are not outside. They can somehow inspire you. But this inspiration is only to look within yourself.
Right?
How many times you have rejected your parents' opinions? Many times, right? But have you rejected your own inner voice? Very rarely. But what if there is an eclipse of your parents' suggestion and your own inner conscience? When they meet together and form an eclipse, that's the best scenario, see? So it's not enough that your parents meditate. I have also to meditate and mix. I have to vibrate at the same level, see?
Yeah. Yes, Daji. There's something very interesting you said about how the material world can be balanced with the spiritual world. And because you reference science so much, I'd love to ask you the scientific perspective about what goes on in your mind, your heart, your soul, that guides you along the path of your career and along the path of your life when you inculcate spirituality.
It's very simple, Ranveer. Very simple for me to tell you. When we have to make decision, be it marriage, be it my career, or be it what I'm going to eat next. Simple things like that. Always refer to the heart. See? And we don't have to have this exercise of closing your eyes and meditating and say, oh, let me think, figure out what I'm going to eat next. That is wrong. That is going on another direction. See? The heart should be so sensitive enough through practice that it warns you each time. See, what is the basic nature of your heart? It, first of all, it works like a radar, picks up the wrong things, what is wrong in the process. Simple example would be, let us see, you are able to hear me well, right? And when we are face to face in person and you say, Kamlesh Bhai, I'm not able to see you. or you are speaking but I'm not able to hear you, what will your heart say? Anbir, it's time to go to a doctor. Something is wrong with my eyes or with my ears. So when something becomes unnatural, heart warns us. But when things are going in a natural way, we are seeing well, we are hearing well, it doesn't give any warnings. Or it does not congratulate you. Wow, Ranveer, you're looking good. You are able to hear well. No, it doesn't say anything of that sort. So, nature of the heart is to give us warnings. When things are going properly, it doesn't give any warning. At the most, in certain situations, it will give you contentment. But people have lost the track of identifying what is contentment and what is satisfaction. They want immediate results. They want immediate rewards. But contentment is something that comes as time passes. You have to wait for it, see? It has to mature. Spirituality is not something very esoteric to me. Spirituality is very practical. If I have to lie and say, Ranveer, I have achieved so much and I am a doctor of so and so and so, what will happen to my heart at that time when I am bombasting with a lot of ego? My heart will no doubt become heavier. If someone asks you, suppose you meet a beautiful girl on the way at the airport and she asks your name and say, oh, my name is so and so, instead of saying Ranveer, how will you feel at that moment? Your heart will say, oh no, Ranveer, don't screw it up, don't lie like this. Your heart will become heavier. Whenever you have lied, your heart becomes heavier. But this conscience and all these physiological parameters, they're all connected, see. And people say, there is nothing like spirituality. All right, don't call it spirituality. They don't have to name it or, you know. But every person, even cat, even your little dog understands when they do the wrong thing, when they spoil your carpet. And you see how they huddle down with their mouth down. They also know that they have done something wrong. So conscience is there even in little animals. How can a man or a woman be without conscience? We all have that, see. That's the voice of your heart. Problem comes when you don't want to listen to your heart. It is speaking louder and louder each time, but you say, shut up, shut up, shut up. This is a wonderful girl. I have to take her to bed tonight if possible. You are rushing into it. And that's where we fail, see. Your immediate urge to satisfy yourself at any cost. And this to me, I think it's a terrible thing. Compassion is where you sacrifice your life for somebody else, right? And such act of satisfying yourself at the cost of other, to me it's rape. So to me, as I was sharing with you, that spirituality is not something esoteric, it's very practical. It can be applied in a day-to-day life simply by listening to your heart. See, many a time, you know, guys like, young age, they come and say, Kamlesh Bhai, we are in love for a long time. I'm also loving the other person. So it's a complex situation, whom to marry? So I tell them, to me, the answer is very simple. When love is on both sides, right? There is a girl for me, there is another girl for me. I love her too. It happens, it can happen to many people. But in this scenario, now you figure it out, who loves you more? You love somebody more or she loves you more? If in both situations, you find the situation where a girl says, and you feel in your heart that somebody else is loving me more and she's willing to sacrifice anything and everything. While a girl who puts a condition in front of you, she loves you, but puts a condition, I will not live with your parents after marriage. That's a warning signal. Stay away. Though both of you are in love, but there's a condition on the other side. While the other person is ready to sacrifice anything and everything. So that is your choice.
I will retain that message for this upcoming phase of my life for sure, Raji.
Good luck to you on that.
You know, you said something very interesting about sacrifice. I've had a very, for lack of a better word, tumultuous past, a tormenting past where I've had substance abuse in my life. I've been into drugs. I've been deeply into alcohol and gradually come out of that in my life. Where, you know, I've really embraced the process of meditation and everything around it a lot more deeply at the age of 27. And I've also discovered this beautiful word that's always stayed with me, especially in this phase. The word is called sadhana. And sadhana basically means a discipline. And there are gifts at the end of discipline, but that's not why you should do the sadhana. You should do the sadhana because eventually the result of discipline and sadhana is an easier life, is a more peaceful and contentment-filled life. But I'd love for you to share some, you know, knowledge or wisdom about the concept of sadhana and how it applies to modern-day humans, especially young people are not willing to sacrifice to get to that next stage of life. And I feel like people should read more about sadhana, know more about sadhana, just for their own self-evolution. So I'd love to know your opinion on it.
Once one of my masters, he was sharing a story of one young boy. He says, I'm going to do so much of tapasya and achieve the highest in shortest possible time. So Guru advised him, you must perform sadhana. You must embrace sadhana. So 10 years later, they meet. And that so-called disciple was so happy and say, I'm so happy you advised me to embrace sadhana. Oh, great, great, great. And the Guru asked, what sort of sadhana you are practicing? He calls, sadhana, please come here. He married a lady named sadhana. Anyway, this is a stupid joke. But sadhana is a word. It conveys so many things. That's something that you do to achieve. What is sadhana? Sadhya. What you want to achieve. Now, you in the beginning itself, you had asked me a question about God. What do you understand by God? Suppose a person says, I want to realize God. It's too subtle an idea. It's very fancy to talk about God, but when it comes to, I want to realize God, it's like you're looking at 360 degrees without knowing where I am going, what God is. Sadhana is a process. You want to achieve something, right? What do you want to achieve? So immediate goal should be clear in our mind. And the highest goal need not be crystallized in your mind, but some direction has to be there in your mind that I want to go in this direction. Right? So now, having understood this much, if your goal is, okay, now at the moment, I'm so much troubled, I'd like to get rid of this stress. So the goal becomes distressing yourself and you want to bring about some level of peace in your heart. Okay. Having achieved peace, you'll come up with something else. Oh, I want to go a little bit higher. You have understood that much. It is like, you know, when you are driving around the mountain during the winter days, early morning, and there's so much of, you know, this fog all around. You hardly see anything 10 feet away from you. But nevertheless, you continue your journey, right? And you go 10 feet. And then you'll see another 10 feet, and you'll see another 10 feet, and that's how the journey continues until you reach the peak. But if you say, I'm not going to continue beyond this 10 feet because I don't see anything beyond 10 feet, then you are a failure, see. You have failed. Spirituality is also like that. Nothing will be clear to us on the journey on the first day. But as we move along, it reveals to us. Little by little, little by little. Why? As I was saying earlier, what is God to me? It's not so important what is God. For me, what is important is how I can become godly, more compassionate, more loving. You see? So my aspect of understanding of God is resonating with that entity we call love. How to arrive at it? So there's the whole exercise of spirituality, if you look at it from one perspective, it is all about love. It is not the love people talk about in common parlor. It is something very different. As I was saying, pleasure, joy, bliss, they are different. Love is also different. For example, love between a couple versus love between a mother and a son or mother and a daughter. Right? It is different. Affection that we have between friends. Maitri bhav, matru bhav, pitru bhav, guru bhav. All these are given various names. But when it comes to God, very few people understand that, and I don't blame or criticize them, because there is no way to feel that until we achieve that level. All the practices that we talk about, spiritual practices, it is only to come to that level of understanding, and not just understanding, but becoming that. See, to me, becoming is more important. So that you have become in the process. Love itself, you see. Swami Vivekananda, he once said, purpose of all spiritual practices is only one. And that is to expand your available consciousness. This available consciousness that we all have, it is like a thin film of water sandwiched between two giant oceans. Can you imagine? Thin film of water. Imagine it being sandwiched between Pacific and Atlantic oceans. That's how our available consciousness is. And he says, I must be able to soar higher into the sky of superconsciousness. And I must be able to dive deeper into the oceans of subconsciousness through the spiritual practice I am indulging with. So the aspect of sadhana, it's evolutionary. Would you be happy if I tell you, Ranveer, that you had a beautiful experience of samadhi, and day after day, you have the same experience? Would you be happy? I don't think so. Have you seen that movie? What was that movie where this guy has the same experience day after day? Groundhog Day. Huh?
Oh, right. Groundhog Day.
Oh my God. I mean, imagine his frustration. Everything repeats the same, you know, every single day. And spiritually, during your sadhana, if you go on experiencing the same thing again and again, I mean, there is nothing more frustrating than that. But I do find people, they say, oh, I was with this such and such a guru, and I was in Mansarovar, and I was in Kailash, and he touched me, and then say, wow, I have elevated you. Elevation is not once. It is incremental. Purity is not once. It is incremental purity. Suppose God gives you a gift and says, Ranveer, I have totally purified your consciousness. I don't think you will recognize yourself. you'll go gaga in a sad way. Because you cannot tolerate 100% purity. This improvement of purity has to be incremental, gradual, to the extent we can tolerate it.
Got it.
Right? So when we move from one chakra, in yoga, we often talk about chakra system, which is energy system. And we take a journey, especially with heartfulness, with the heart. The reason is the three chakras which are below that, which are common with animals. Here begins humanity. We have to expand that. Compassion, love, empathy is part of this heart. And then we move on to another chakra, to the next level, to the next level, and it continues. And when you are at one particular chakra, you have some level of consciousness. And with Guru's help, who guides us in meditation, with transmission. And transmission is very unique. It takes us deeper into our levels of samadhis, you know. The samadhi that you enjoy while you are at heart chakra is different from the samadhi you achieve at Atma chakra or fire point or you know, so many chakras are there. Yeah. So it's evolutionary. Sadhana can be very joyful only when there is a change in consciousness all the time. Now for an experiment's sake, I mean to the audience who are listening, try this out. You meditate on the heart, thinking of presence of the divine principle, that my heart is an embodiment of the source of all that is divine. Make that thought and sit for meditation. Now, another form of meditation, the same thing they do, that same divine principle, the source of all that is divine is present in my heart, but you invoke this pranahuti transmission, which is available through heartfulness way. You compare the experiences. You know, I have a pharmacy background, Ranbir. Whenever we have to research a new drug, it is compared with a placebo or compared with an existing. Let us say if you are researching a painkiller, you are comparing with the existing painkiller. Does my new molecule have lesser side effect than existing molecule, or is it better in quickly relieving my pain than the previous one? Then this new entity will have a good market value. Right? What is happening today with Pfizer COVID vaccine, right? Or Bharat or Serum Technologies or Moderna or, you know, so AstraZeneca, so many are there. So we say how effective it is and see if it has least amount of side effects. So any spiritual seeker trying to fulfill personal spiritual goal has to be very vigilant. He has to have a scientific approach. That if I meditate just like that, and if I meditate with this transmission under heartfulness way, is it better? Does it give me a better experience? Then that is for you. So I urge that you must try it before you make a judgment. See? And we have this app called Hearts app. You know, it's like, you know, what is that cab thing we have? Uber cab, right?
Uber.
You are Uber cab. And you make a request that I would like to be picked up and I have to go to this place. So someone who is near around will say, Ranbir, I'm coming. And they pick you up, right? Similarly, let us say you are in India and you want to meditate and suddenly you woke up at 2 a.m. and say, I would like to meditate. With the help of a trainer. Now, who are you going to contact at 2 a.m. in India? So this app will search a trainer and log in to you, maybe from New York or maybe someone from Paris, and say, okay, Ranbir, I'm available, and they'll sit with you and transmit to you, which you can feel it. As I was saying, it's a matter of experience again. It's not hooky-pooky thing.
It's something people only understand after experiencing things like this.
So it's easily available. And anytime, all these practitioners plus the trainers are available, and those who would like to meditate. On Sunday, I transmit from here, from our ashram, I transmit this pranavati at 9 a.m. every morning from ashram, and they can all join. Even if they are first time meditator, they can join at 8:45. There is a link, heartfulness meditation on Sundays, and they can take benefit of it.
Daji, I'd love for you to share some knowledge about the concept of chakras. Like, if you had to teach a four-year-old about chakras, how would you introduce that concept? Like, in its simplest form, like, what are chakras? How many are there? What do they stand for? What is it?
Simply put, chakras are like circuit breakers. You know, we have multiple, suppose electric current is passing through a wire. You have attached, in the first place, some equipment, another equipment, third equipment, fourth equipment, fifth equipment. And if the resistance in each is different, right? So from 110 to 220, various levels of currents will be passing. So you have to filter it, right? But if the same current is passing without these resistances and reaches out, it can blow the circuit and burn it. Okay. What happens at the moment of conception? Does the soul enter these incrementally dividing cells, ultimately becoming a body? At the moment of this conception, no. Soul does not enter at that time. Soul awaits outside, hovers around mother's womb, allows things to happen inside. It is when the Brahmarandhra chakra is formed. It enters through that Brahmarandhra, because that has a certain level of resistance. It enters and slowly comes down as the other chakras I have already formed inside. Right? If it strays away, comes down, then there is a breaker of circuit. Similarly, the escaping or outgoing soul, it follows the reverse path from Muladhara chakra to Swadhisthana to Nabhi, to heart chakra, and it goes on and to the top. See, they all have a specific function. They all have a specific environment. That when my consciousness is settled on the second chakra that we call Atma chakra, I will have some level of peace. But when I am on the 10th chakra, my peace, of course I have. But the frequency of that calmness and peace will be different. So it's again a matter of experience. Simply put, I would say these chakras are kind of a circuit breakers. And also it's all about various degree of consciousness. They reflect. See.
Right. Daji, I have to ask you one of the hottest questions sent in by the Twitterverse, which is a question about someone who you've mentored in some ways, Rohit Sharma. So a lot of people have questions about him. As a cricket fan, I'm a huge admirer of him. I've been an admirer since he broke out onto the scene. And we've all seen what he can do. But, you know, what's really special about that soul in that man's body? I'd love to know that because I know that you know him at that level. And also at this stage of life, you know, where he's accomplished so much, he's considered one of India's all-time greatest batsmen. What's next for him on a personal level? Like, what does he wish for next?
Well, his success, I would tell you, lies in his ability to pause. if you watch him, and he has learned this art of pausing. Pausing to me, it's like a mini state of meditation. You go within. You are gathering your inner composure before you strike. See, if you watch him, he's very poised while he's batting. Each ball, he's not worried about this or that. He's simply poised and waiting. Waiting with the poise. That is his success. His ability to poise out at any given moment is that. Similarly, this poise, aspect of poise or pausing. Let us say you are conversing with someone you love. Blah, 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 you know, and you are also responding similarly, in a bubbling with a hot temper or whatever. How will that go? Versus other person may be boiling up and irritated and talking like that, but you as Ranveer, you're weighing out with a poise and you choose not to respond at that moment. And say, okay, baad mein dekh lenge. Baad mein baat karenge. So, ability to pause and also postponing certain things. You are buying time. And by the time the person who has been irritated will also calm down, see. And then that person also will forget, why should I bother Ranveer? Also, when you are buying time, you might know your own mistake for which the other person is irritated. Maybe that person is right. It gives you a moment to reflect. So pausing, poise, it's a great quality. In sports, in studies, in business world, corporate world, I mean everywhere it can be utilized. So I would request all our friends to learn the art of pausing. Right. Longer the pause, better it is. And if you can add to this pause a flavor of godliness, it's a win-win situation, see.
Daji, so thank you firstly. You've answered so many of my personal questions. So many personal traumas have been healed in many ways. I would like to do the same for our Twitterverse on this podcast. We now have a section where we take on questions from all the Twitter followers of the Beer Biceps team. So these are just like short, quick questions. You can even answer them in short if you wish. So Spacewalker, G. Mathur 93 asks us, how do you know if you're meditating in the correct manner? I meditate for 35 to 45 minutes at a stretch on a daily basis. I do feel calm, but what's next? Is there any kind of Kriya Yoga or Vipassana meditation that I should be practicing next?
Well, I wish you log into HeartsApp and get the dose of this Pranahuti or transmission and see how it changes your experiences. I am sure you will not regret those experiences. Please try it. Hearts up.
Got it. Do you have anything to say about his time that he's been meditating for? A lot of people have this question about if they start meditation as a practice, how long they should sit for initially.
Well, you start with whatever you can start with. 5 minutes, 10 minutes, you can begin with. You can go up to 1 hour, but you should not meditate more than 1 hour at a stretch.
Okay.
Take a break for 5-10 minutes, walk around, and if you like to meditate again, start again. But never more than 1 hour at a stretch.
Gaurav Padam asks, while there are many paths of spirituality, how do I know if I am on the right path towards spirituality?
Well, it's a fundamental question that we all go through, whether I'm on the right track or not. You will know it only when your ever-changing consciousness is a witnessing sign that my consciousness is changing, my experiences are changing, I'm becoming better and better person, my negative qualities are going, and I'm becoming more influenced with such qualities like love and compassion. And more people will come and say, wow, there's something different with this person. Then you say, wow, thank God, I'm becoming better with this practice.
Swati Sahawal asks, I want to know how to be detached from the material while living within a materialistic world.
Well, I wish you do everything with passion. You see? Because without passion, even spirituality will fail. Swami Vivekananda says, give me a man of passion and see what I can do. So passion is not wrong. See, attachment is not wrong. Many people say, I don't want to earn money. What is wrong with earning money? If you don't make money, then the other negative elements in the society will end up making money. And you are supporting that to a proliferation of negative elements. So I would wish that you should make money. Nothing wrong with it. But spiritualize your material efforts. Meaning, anytime you do anything, bring God into the equation. Bring divinity into the equation. Meaning, bring love into whatever you are doing. And is love possible without passion?
That's beautiful. It's a powerful answer. Rahul Gupta asks, very simple question. What is samadhi?
Samadhi, in short, if you are looking for a literary answer, sam, it's a word in Sanskrit, meaning sam plus adi. Sam, equivalent to adi, means original state. What original state? That was prevailing before the creation. So absolute balance that prevailed before the creation, if you can experience that absolute balance, where you are not shaken, you are not disturbed. Not just during meditation, but that becomes your life. That is samadhi to me. And it can change. It can change until you achieve the highest. So, as I was sharing, you cannot have absolute purity all of a sudden. Likewise, you cannot have absolute samadhi all of a sudden. It comes in incremental doses as we practice more and more.
Amazing. Keshav Jindal asks, how to decide whether an act is forgivable or not? And are all acts forgivable? How to forgive myself as well as others?
It's a difficult thing to forgive. We have to see the situations at every moment, what caused it. And if I cannot forgive also, I have to understand how long I want to harbor this toxicity in my heart. By not forgiving, who is getting hurt? Is it the other person or myself? Other person may have forgotten you altogether, but you are holding it in your heart. So they say, it is easy to forgive, but not forget. So, if it remains in your mind as a memory, there is nothing wrong with it. Because when someone really does hurt you, or let us see, I get affected by a fire. It teaches me not to touch the fire. If you are affected by some bad experience by someone, I should not forget it. But I should not hold it as an emotional baggage and hold that person ever in a negative way, because it only toxifies me. It only creates toxins in my system. With heartfulness way, we have methodology how to get rid of all these past baggage in a very simple way. So once again, I urge you guys, you know, try this out and see how easily it can remove all this toxicity.
Amazing. Dajin, the next question is from Ayush Bajaj. Another very interesting question. How do we know the difference between an intuitive voice and a negative voice inside our own heads?
It is always present, and it is what we call discriminative faculty of a human being. As we evolve more and more, you know, there are individuals who understand that if I do such and such a thing, it is not going to bring about good results. They know ahead of time. there are certain individuals who would, while going through that particular process, you know, they will understand whether I'm doing right or wrong. And if they become aware of it, that I'm doing it wrong, they have the ability to stop it. Some people, they say, oh, I already started it. Why? What is the point of stopping it? And some individuals, to me, they even after they have gone through it, doing a wrong thing, they still don't get it. So this is again a difference in how evolved your consciousness is all. So to improve our consciousness, once again, I cannot emphasize more and more and more and more the importance of meditation. It helps us, first of all, how to discriminate what is right, what is wrong, what is beneficiary, what is not beneficiary, what is causing, what is the effect, what is profitable, what is a loss situation. So person who meditates, his heart is always so inwardly tuned. See, you will identify what is right, what is wrong. Our next thing is the courage to follow what is right and stay away from what is wrong. So that's the next step. See, some people have it, some people don't have it.
And I think the last question, again from Ayush Bajaj, does everything happen for a greater purpose? I'm also very interested in knowing this.
I don't think the universe has any purpose. I have to create my own purpose of my existence. Because I am not moved by somebody telling me this is your purpose, unless and until that can also become my purpose. So even though the universe may guide me into a certain purpose, it has to become my purpose. You know, often people say, is my destiny fixed? I would say yes and no. You know, suppose if I tell you, Ranbir, stand up, and you know, Ranbir stand up, lift your leg. You lifted one leg. I also ask, lift your second leg. In the first scenario, you had a choice which leg to lift. In the second scenario, you had no choice. Destiny is like that. We have created our destiny in the past. For example, if you're an engineer, why are you an engineer? Because you studied in the past to become an engineer, right? What I do now will create my destiny in the future. So I am the maker of my destiny. At the same time, I do get influenced by others' actions as well. You see? So we are complex, we are always in a complex situation. Something that is done by myself, something that is done by my parents, something that is done by the government, for example. I have a very typical situation I face often. Girl is in love with someone. Parents say something else. Now, and the destiny is something else. Which one is right for a person? We don't know. We don't know. Because even if you know this person is right, you don't know whether you'll have a happy path or not. You have seen in Ramayana, Lord Rama and Mother Sita. Their future was predicted by no less a person than sage Vasishtha. Perfect prediction. But everything that can go wrong went wrong because of the interference of Kaikeyi, mother, who changed the destiny of these two individuals. And in the process, the father died out of heart attack. So you don't know how our destinies are manipulated. Something is in my control. Hold that control and regulate it through a sound decision, your mind. You can always make a rightful decision with a poised mind. So arrive at that, and I pray that you all achieve that.
Daji, thank you for answering the Twitter versus questions. Before I let you go, I have to be a little selfish again one last time. And I feel like whenever I get to talk to someone at your spiritual level, at your level of wisdom, there's always something I am supposed to take away on a personal level as the host. So I'm happy to accept whatever advice you have for me, if you have any. I think you got to know me a little bit over the course of this conversation. So whatever you have for me, I would love to know.
Well, I'd like to initiate you to this path and see where it can take you. We can achieve great heights together. Your vibratory level, the way you would end up speaking later, will affect the others, because this energy will go along with your voice. And whatsoever you touch will be affected in a positive way. And that's what I'm looking for. Infecting people with love and spirituality. That's all. I want nothing in return. As
I said. Of course I know that, Daji. Like, I'm just... I can't tell you how much peace and love I experience just simply speaking with you. And I mean, I'm honestly a little speechless now. So I'd actually end the podcast here and just thank you. I bow down to you. And I, from the bottom of my heart, thank you for just sharing all the wisdom.
Thank you, Ranbir. Thank you. Be well, my friend.
Yes. 100%. Thank you.